There are two markers here. Which one is the one? And three. Okay, what verse is on the board? Is there a board? No. So no chant, no repeat, repetition. Okay. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Oh. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 24, Text 1, 2, and whatever, maybe 3, we'll see. Shishukuvacha. Shishukadev Goswami said, Adastat, there is no purport. The chapter title is The Subterranean Heavenly Planets. Shishukadev Goswami said, My dear King, some historians, the speakers of the Puranas, say that 10,000 yojanas, or 80,000 miles, below the sun, is the planet known as Rahu, which moves like one of the stars. The presiding deity of that planet, who is the son of Singhika, is the most abominable of all asuras. But although he is completely unfit to assume the position of a demigod or planetary deity, he has achieved that position by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Later I shall speak further about this. Can you hear? You can understand? No. No? Maybe accent, I don't know. Maybe this is too close. Do you speak English, everyone? Is there any non-English speaker? I'm sorry, we do not speak Hindi. But Bombay, people speak English a lot, in Bombay, that's Mumbai. So we'll go on to text 2 and see what comes up. Yadatas tarana mandalam patapatas tad vistarato yojana yutam achakshate dvadasya sahasrang somasya trayodasya sahasrang rahor yaha paravani tad vyavadhana krit vairanu bandahasurya chandrama savabhidavati. The sun globe, which is a source of heat, extends for 10,000 yojanas, 80,000 miles. The moon extends for 20,000 yojanas, 160,000 miles. And Rahu extends for 30,000 yojanas, 240,000 miles. Formerly, when nectar was being distributed, Rahu tried to create dissension between the sun and the moon by interposing himself between them. Rahu is inimical toward both the sun and the moon, and therefore he always tries to cover the sunshine and the moonshine on the dark moon day and the full moon night. Purport. As stated herein, the sun extends for 10,000 yojanas, and the moon extends for twice that, or 20,000 yojanas. The word dvadasha should be understood to mean twice as much as 10, or 20. In the opinion of Vijayadvaj, the extent of Rahu should be twice that of the moon, or 40,000 yojanas. However, to reconcile this apparent contradiction to the text of the Bhagavatam, Vijayadvaj cites the following quotation concerning Rahu. Rahu soma ravinam tumandaladri gunodikam. Nope, ditam. This means that Rahu is twice as large as the moon, which is twice as large as the sun. This is the conclusion of the commentator Vijayadvaj. An interesting information about Rahu. The mention here of this trying to take the nectar. And long time we haven't heard the story, but the pastime of Mohini Murti, how he disguised himself as one of the demigods, and when the nectar was being given to the demigods, he managed to take a little drop of that nectar. And who was it who recognized him? Was it the moon? One of the demigods recognized that this person is not a demigod. He's Rahu, he's a demon. And then his head was severed. But the nectar had already touched his mouth. It's not yet gone to the body. So this nectar gives not exactly immortality, but within the material world, more or less immortality. So his head remained. And he remains, this planet Rahu is the head of this demon, which creates no end of trouble to the pious planets of sun and moon and so on and so forth. Always creating trouble with eclipses and covering the moon on. Here it mentions full moon also, but always creating trouble, especially to the moon. Very inimical towards the moon is Rahu. And it's very hard for most people to understand this. And even here we see it's not a clear-cut subject matter, the exact size and extent of these planets. It's very hard to understand even the material world, what to speak of the spiritual world. And the extent of the Rahu planet appears to be far greater than that of the sun. This is very, even to accept the existence of such a planet which causes the waning of the moon, covers the moon, or causes eclipses of the sun or the moon, is very hard for people to understand, or to accept, or to speak of understand. We may be conditioned, some of you may have been studying in some college, some science or something. It's very hard to accept these points for most people who have been indoctrinated to believe that the sun is here and the moon is here and this and that. I'm not a scientist. I never studied science in any way, really. But we can understand from the Srimad Bhagavatam there's a lot that we don't know. This is just giving us a little indication of the greatness of the creation of God. But the main thing to understand is not so much the detail. That may be there, and that's no doubt interesting. But the real thing to understand is that everything comes from Krishna. Everything is his arrangement, is immeasurable. The energies of the Lord are immeasurable and are inconceivable. So we'll go on to the next verse, where there's a continuation of this topic. Tannisham yo bhayatrapi bhagavata rakshanaya prayuktam sudarshanam nama bhagavatam daitam ashtram tadite jasadurvishaham muhu. Parivartamanam abhyavastito muhurtam udvijamanaschukita hridaya arareva nivartate tad uparagam iti vadanti lokah. After hearing from the sun and the moon, demigods, about Rahu's attack, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu engages his disc, known as the Sudarshan Chakra, to protect them. The Sudarshan Chakra is the Lord's most beloved devotee and is favored by the Lord. The intense heat of its effulgence meant for killing non-Vaishnavas is unbearable to Rahu, and he therefore flees in fear of it. During the time Rahu disturbs the sun and the moon, or moon, there occurs what people commonly know as an eclipse. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu is always the protector of his devotees, who are also known as demigods. The controlling demigods are most obedient to Lord Vishnu, although they also want material sense enjoyment, and that is why they are called demigods, or almost godly. Not completely godly. Demigod. Because they're Sakama Bhaktas. We have Nishkama Bhaktas and Sakama Bhakta. They're attached to a little bit of sense gratification. They're very pious devotees, but they're mixed. Most of them. Some of them are Nishkama. Or completely detached from this world, whose only purpose is to serve the Lord. They don't ask anything in return. So here it's discussing the Sakama Bhaktas, those who have some material request or something they're expecting in return. Although Rahu attempts to attack both the sun and the moon, they are protected by Lord Vishnu. Being very afraid of Lord Vishnu's chakra, Rahu cannot stay in front of the sun or the moon for more than a muhurta, 48 minutes. The phenomena that occurs when Rahu blocks the light of the sun or moon is called an eclipse. The attempt of the scientists of this earth to go to the moon is as demonic as Rahu's attack. That's a pretty powerful statement. The attempt of the scientists to go to the moon is as demoniac as Rahu's attack. Amazing, eh? Of course, their attempts will be failures because no one can enter the moon or the sun so easily. Like the attack of Rahu, such attempts will certainly be failures. And this is a very interesting topic. You know, when this fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam came out back in about 75 or 6 or something, it was many devotees, they were very disturbed. Some devotees left ISKCON just by reading the fifth canto of Bhagavatam. They left. Even some very senior devotees they couldn't accept it. Many devotees could not accept that man did not go to the moon. Of course they went to the moon, some people say. And to accept that the sun, rather the moon, is further away and bigger than the sun is just, it's not something which people easily accept, and even devotees sometimes. This is called faith. Our spiritual advancement doesn't depend upon our learning, whether you know all these details of universal structure and so on, some are given there. And we may not understand it even after hearing it, but the difference is that we accept simplicity. The first quality of a Vaishnava is simplicity. You do not need to be an intellectual. Sometimes that is a disqualification, to be intellectual. Sometimes. It doesn't have to be. But if we're proud of our intellect, then it's not possible to Because this understanding, this realization is something we cannot work out with our material Takshi Krishna Namadina Bhavad Grayamindrai Seva Mukahi Jivado Swayameva Sprachada. We can't work it out with our material senses. There's so many things in this world, almost everything in fact. We cannot really understand how it's all going on. How our body works, how everything in this around us, how it's all going on. It's practically beyond our imagination, beyond our ability to understand or to imitate. So this is the quality of a devotee, is we become purified when we approach these topics with a submissive attitude. It's this submissive attitude which really attracts Krishna's attention, and he reveals the real truth behind everything. He reveals himself through this simplicity, having faith. This implicit faith, yasya devi parabhakti yata devita tagaro tasya tayati takata pakashante mahatmanaha. The one who has this faith, this implicit faith in the spiritual master and in the Lord, in the scripture, faith, I accept it. I may not understand it, but I accept it. Who am I to question it? What do I understand? What do I know? Who am I? Who are the scientists? Who are the politicians? Who are the even religionists nowadays? Who are they? What qualification do they have to comment upon the scriptures? At least upon the Vedic literature. Who has that qualification to comment on such elevated topics? Such incredibly elevated topics. You're going into a description of the subterranean heavenly planets. You hardly know about it. We don't even know what's inside this earth planet. What to speak of other planets? Anyway, Srila Prabhupada talks about these attempts of the scientists and big hoax. Even in 69, I don't know, when they first so-called went to the moon. Prabhupada was in London, and they were watching on the television. They had television then in London, 69, and the so-called landing in the moon. And I think it was then they said, it looks remarkably like the Arizona desert. The Arizona desert, if you don't know, is a desert in America. It's a desert in America. So the commentator on the television said it looks very much like the Arizona desert. So Prabhupada said, he made some comments later on. He said, why they are saying it looks like the Arizona desert? Because it is the Arizona desert. He never went to the moon. He always made this point. And even if they could so-called go to the moon, they can't really enter into the moon. It's just like you may go to some country. And many times we go to a country in a plane and the plane lands at the airport. You may get off and you sit in the airport, but you don't really enter into the country. You don't have the visa. If you don't, you may be sitting in the airport, so in one sense you can say you're in the country. But you're not really in the country, because you don't have the visa. To enter into these planets, you have to have the visa. You have to have the necessary permit to enter in. To even the material planets, what to speak of the spiritual planets. And Prabhupada, way back, in the early 60s, maybe 61 or something, he wrote this book, Easy Journey to Other Planets. Very nice book, isn't it? You've read Easy Journey? Who's read this book, Easy Journey to Other Planets? Not many. Hands up if you've read it. You've not read it? You don't remember anything about it? Nothing at all? I can't remember much either. maybe 20 years since I last read it. But this was actually the first book Prabhupada wrote, practically speaking. This Easy Journey to Other Planets. He talks about the material and anti-material worlds and the qualifications to enter into the, even the material worlds, you have to be qualified. What to speak of the anti-spiritual world? What to speak of the anti-material worlds? The qualifications required to enter into the spiritual world. It's a very interesting little book, and I think he quotes some various scientists who are talking about this anti-material world there. So this is unknown, this knowledge, to most scientists, this knowledge of that which is beyond the material world. In order to understand that, we have to purify our senses. That realization of that world is only possible when by the grace of Krishna. If we have faith in Krishna, if we have simplicity and devotion, only that method, only by those means, will Krishna reveal these transcendental truths. Because after all, where are we coming from? Some of you may be coming from pious backgrounds. We may have a degree in something or another. But how does that qualify us to understand these subject matters? You cannot. You can read these books over and over again, but they're just like a foreign language to most people. It's impossible to understand. It's only by the mercy of the Lord that we can understand these transcendental topics. And it's not even Lord Brahma, after the Brahma Vimohana Leela, after he was perplexed, completely perplexed by the incredible mystical Yogeshwara, the mystical display of Lord Krishna, who was just a little boy. All the planets, Matak parat ramnanyat kinchidasti dananjaya maisavamidam protram sutri maniganaiva. Everything is resting on Krishna. Although he's a little boy playing in the groves of Vrindavan with his coward boys sitting on the banks of the Jamuna enjoying transcendental pastimes. Who can understand? This is God. Even Lord Brahma couldn't understand. He became perplexed. Even he was affected by the modes of nature, that he misunderstood Krishna. What to speak of an ordinary person, even Lord Brahma. So he came to his senses after the Lord had revealed to him his inconceivable potencies. And Lord Brahma was repentant, his humility. He was humble. And he described how that he cannot understand. What can I understand? Who am I? Like a mere insect in this pot called the universe. What can I understand? Look at us. One time Prabhupada would give the sometimes he gave the example. We are sitting here in Bombay. In this universe is one like in a big sack of mustard seeds. This universe is one mustard seed in a big sack of mustard seeds. You know mustard seed? What is that in Hindi? Loud and clear? Rye? Rye. So a big sack of rye. One mustard seed amongst billions of mustard seeds. This universe. And in this universe, there are millions of planets. The Earth planet is one insignificant planet. Relatively speaking, it is very small. Tiny planet in this universe. And on that planet, there is one country named India, which is a big country. Still, it's only a percentage, small percentage of the entire world. And within that country, there is one city called Bombay, which again is a small percentage of India. And within Bombay, there is one area, Chowpatty. I know Chowpatty means beach, it could be anywhere, but anyway, we'll call this Chowpatty. And within Chowpatty, there is one road. What is it called? Munshi? Munshi? Marg. Munshi Marg. Munshi Marg. And within Munshi Marg, there is one building or place, Radha Gopinath Mandir, which is very small. Bombay is small in India. Munshi Marg is, Chowpatty is a small area of Bombay. Munshi Marg is one small road in Chowpatty, and this property is one small property, or one of many properties in Munshi Marg. And we're sitting here, one of many people, sitting here in Prabhupada, and we think that we are God. We're so insignificant. We are so insignificant. If we disappeared from the face of the earth, it would not make much difference. Maybe to us, but not to anyone else much. We are so insignificant. We are so tiny. Even the earth is tiny. The universe is tiny. The material energy is tiny. It's a fragment of the Lord's creation. Very small fragment. So we should try to understand this and be a little humble. The idea of these various descriptions is, of course, one can try to understand it and try to, if one has the intellect, to explain these things to those who are scientifically minded. Otherwise, it's to humble us, to bring us to the point of humility and tolerance and showing respect towards others. The purpose of these incredible descriptions in the scriptures sometimes of the universal form and so on, to bring us to, just like Arjuna, when Krishna revealed the universal form to him, he became very humbled. We realize how small we are, how tiny we are, and how little ability we have to understand that which is beyond our perception. We cannot go there. We cannot see. We just watch something on the TV and maybe believe it. We have not been. And question whether anyone has been, but we certainly haven't. Whereas the Vedic literature, they are eternal. Apurusha. They're infallible. They don't depend upon time and circumstance. They are eternal. Bhagavatam is transcendental. These topics are mentioned here in Bhagavatam. We can say, what's it got to do with Krishna? What's this got to do with devotional service? What will we answer? What is the point? What is the reason for describing Rahu and Rahu's influence and covering the moon and the sun and this and that? Why? What's the point? Any reason? Is there any reason? No? No reason? We should edit the Bhagavatam and take all this out? Only creates confusion, right? Rahu. I mean, look at this. Look what it says here. What's happened here? It says that 80,000 miles below the sun is the planet of Rahu. And Rahu extends 240,000 miles. Doesn't make sense, does it? To a logical mind. It means if 80,000 miles... Because we don't understand how this works. It's not working on the relative direct platform we look at. Different levels. It's like within the lotus stem coming from Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, all the planets are contained within that lotus stem. How is this possible? We're only seeing things from a relative perspective. Otherwise we think, this is ridiculous. That means that the Rahu planet, I mean 80,000 miles is nothing in universal dimensions. 240,000 miles is not that much. But it means there's only a little gap between the sun and the Rahu. It's like next door neighbor. And then there's this big Rahu planet bigger than the sun. 3 or 4 times bigger. But this is descriptions that there, you know, from Sariputta and others who have written books on, you know, universal. What's that book you wrote? I can't remember. But different books on these things. Trying to explain this topic, which is very hard for materially minded persons to understand. So why are these things there? Is it just to create confusion? Is it just to make the scientists think we're mad? Or what? Does it increase our faith in Krishna? Does it inspire us to become Krishna conscious? What is the main points here, from our point of view? Not so much, I mean from my point of view anyway, not so much these technical details. There's 2 points which I pick up on here primarily, besides the ones we've already mentioned, like, you know, the questionable statements of the scientists. 3 things. 1, that everything happens. Can anyone think of anything out of these verses and purports, anything which is practically relevant to us? You have to get something practical out of this. It's not just a question of reading a topic we don't understand and then passing the time of day away. We've got to utilize this time. So what are the what points can you see which are of value in this, in these verses? Yeah, that's, we discussed that just a little bit just now. This is the simplicity and the faith which is required to evoke the mercy of the Lord to reveal everything to us. As our senses become purified by the grace of the Lord, He reveals everything as the sun lights up everything in the morning. Otherwise, everything's in the darkness. Reflection in the darkness is very confusing. What else? Yeah, we can understand how great the universes are, and the energies of God are very unlimited. I was picking up a little bit more on the, let's say, the attitude. The first one was regarding Rahu. Although he's completely unfit to attain the position of a demigod or a planetary deity, he achieved it. Why? How? By the grace of the Lord. Well, look at us, we're sitting here, born in an Asura family. Some introduction was given at the beginning. We didn't mention the town that we were born in. We were born in a town called Pig Hill. You know what that means? Pig Hill. The Hill of the Pigs. You know hill? Parvat? What's, forgotten the word for pig. What's pig? In Hindi, what's pig? Hog. Hog. Huh? Huh? To what? To what? Anyway, you all know what I mean. Pig, pig, P-I-G, pig. Pig, Not Varaha, Lord of Varaha. Hog, like that. Material pig. It was the hill, Parvat. You call Parvat? Hill? Parvat. The hill of the pigs. We were born in the hill of the pigs. It was a pig farm. Born in a pig market, a big pig market. Everyone would bring their pigs there to sell them. We were born there. And all around were pig farms. Slaughterhouse, everything. Pig slaughterhouse. There were not many Muslims living there. No Muslims were there. In one place, at least. Pig Hill. And we're born there. And some or another. And what is our qualification? I don't think that's the qualification for being here in this wonderful association. But it's simply by the mercy of the Lord, mercy of the pure devotee, that we should always remember that we're here. There may be some things we don't understand. We should feel so fortunate that we're here. We've been given this opportunity, at least, to be elevated. That's truly by the mercy of the Lord. We have no other qualification. None. Don't think your degrees or your birth or your good family or your wealth. These are not qualifications for receiving the mercy of Krishna. Some or another. We may not even have. One time Prabhupada was asked his nice verse in Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, Yesham Tvantakatam Papam Janana Punya Karmanam, that only those who've acted piously in previous lives as well as this, and whose sinful reactions are eradicated and freed of the duality of this material world, illusion, can engage in devotional service with determination. And but what qualification do we have? One time one devotee asked Srila Prabhupada, that he said, Prabhupada, my life has been very impious. It's like when I was a kid, I used to work in the pig slaughterhouse. That's what the jobs were. You either worked in the railways or you worked in the pig slaughterhouse. Two things in the town that I lived in or born in. So I used to work with some other thing there, but mainly those were the things. So what type of piety is that? Piety? No piety. Sinful reactions? Our lives were full of sin. Full of sin. Some of you may have been more pious. I'm sure all of you were. Our lives, we knew nothing other than sin. Meat eating, intoxication, illicit sex, everything you could imagine. There was nothing wrong with it. It was accepted as normal life. In fact, I remember somebody was a vegetarian. Somebody I heard was a vegetarian. It was very rare for someone to be a vegetarian in England, very rare. And they were considered mad. They were considered mad. It was even the family wanted to put them into a mental hospital to try to cure them of their problem. They're going crazy. People would think that vegetarians were crazy in those days. It was extremely rare to be a vegetarian. It was like a cult, like a dangerous cult, something that had to be wiped out. Like that. So it was very unpious. But Prabhupada said, when he was asked by one devotee, how is it possible, Srila Prabhupada, that we're engaging in some kind of devotional service? Prabhupada said, I have created your piety. The pure devotee can create that. This is the high end. No matter what else is going on, what we've done or not done, whatever it is, we haven't come to this movement probably by sadhana siddha. Sadhana siddha is not just sitting and chanting japa. It means lifetimes after lifetimes of gradually elevating oneself through karma kanda and various other paths until one actually becomes to the mode of goodness and actually becomes so pious that one becomes eligible to practice spiritual activities. But kripa siddha is our only real hope. We receive the mercy of the spiritual master. This is our only real good fortune, that some or another, the pure devotee, Srila Prabhupada, has come into this world. This is our good fortune. We have no other good fortune other than that. It's our saving grace. Even yourselves, you living here in Bombay, you'd be working in some IT or something, engineering or something, stuck in some 50-story office block in downtown Bombay, passing your life away, wasting our lives. And this is the misfortune that people are in. But by the mercy of the pure devotee, we can wake up from that. That's one point, that everything is by the mercy of the Supreme Lord. Another point I pick up here is that the Lord protects his devotees. He protects the sun and the moon from the attack of Rahu. We're all being attacked in one sense by Rahu, in the sense of ignorance or darkness or demoniac forces. And the only protection, otherwise very fearful, the world is full of fear. How do we overcome fear? Fear due to ignorance. As long as we have bodily identification, we inevitably will be fearful. We cannot avoid it. How do we become free of fear? Yes, we take shelter by taking shelter by remembering the personality of Godhead, chanting his names. The names of the Lord are feared by fear personified. This is because the name is Krishna, none different. Only Krishna can protect us from fear. As he's protecting sun and moon from Rahu, with his disc, this blazing heat, fire of the disc, to destroy the ignorance of illusion. The spiritual master is also, by his mercy, by his instructions, by his blessings even, is removing the darkness of this material world. As the Sudarshan chakra lights up the darkness. Similarly, within our hearts, if we take shelter of Krishna, the darkness within our Om Jnana Timranda Syag and Anjanashna, the darkness within our heart will be dissipated. So by taking shelter of Krishna, we will always be protected. Krishna assures, through Arjuna, he assures the world that my devotee should never be vanquished. And he always is protector of the devotees. The Lord is our only shelter, our only protection. And to get that protection, we need the mercy of the representative of Krishna. If we win the favor of the representative of Krishna, for sure, we will have the protection of the Lord. Now, what that protection is, now some people think that protection means that you will not have to suffer materially. Queen Kunti didn't. She explained that actually, time has come up. I don't know how time passes so quickly. That she prayed for difficulties because in those difficult situations, she took shelter of Krishna. So in doubt, we have doubts here. Maybe over these topics, we can't understand it. Arjuna could not understand what to do either. The Bhagavad Gita is spoken because of the doubts of Arjuna. We all have doubts, but Arjuna showed us how to remove those doubts. Karpanya dosho patasva bhava pichchamitam dharma samudacheta. Vishresham nishitam bruitan me shishashteham sharimam tam prapanam. And Arjuna explains that this is the process of removal of doubts. Simple process. Humble submission to the authority. And then everything is revealed. All one's doubts are removed. One places oneself at the mercy. This is the protection. The Lord protects us from doubt. He protects us from bodily identification. He protects us from fear. And so on. Not that he protects us from dying materially. Or protects us from old age or disease. They may come. Distress comes in this world. This world is made of turmoil and annoyance. Inevitable, the Lord places his devotee into various situations to test their patience and their sincerity. This is his mercy. The devotee doesn't shy away. Tatenu kampam susumikshamanam bunjane vatmikitali pakam. The Buddha doesn't shy away from these things or expect that this is the result of so-called protection of the Lord, that he protects us from all kinds of material distress. He can do that, but it doesn't. That's not the real protection. For those who are unfortunate, that may be their level of protection, not so fortunate. But for the devotee, he doesn't aspire for that. He expects, whatever you want, my Lord, you do what you want with me. The devotee just takes shelter of the Lord. Just allow me to engage in devotional service in any form. Heaven or hell, Narayana Paraksave Nakutaschani Bibhiti. The devotee doesn't mind if he goes to Narakalok, or heavenly planets, or the hellish planets, or anywhere, as long as he engages in the service, because he's Narayana Prayana. He's taken shelter of Krishna, and he feels his protection in every situation he is in. Well, we have to finish. Our time has expired. We just got off the train. We're quite exhausted. I remember the first time we came to Chaupati temple here. I think it was about 8 years ago, I think. And the first devotee I met was Radha Gopinath. You were the first devotee I saw. You were downstairs. And I didn't know where I was. I'd never been to this temple before. And I kind of walked miles to get here from some railway station. And it was late at night. It must have been about 9:30. And I didn't know what to expect. I didn't even know if I'd be allowed to stay here, because I had made no contact with anyone before coming. And I just traveled a long distance from somewhere, another, Calcutta, I think. And Radha Gopinath met us downstairs and looked after us immediately, very nicely. So this, I have to thank you for that. And thank you again for allowing us to stay here for a day or two. I hope we wake up after a few hours. I feel so exhausted. Yesterday we had diarrhea on the journey, and all these things are mercy of Krishna. They help. Krishna arranges everything to help to bring this also. I have no choice. I don't understand this, my Lord. We have to be like the cobbler. And it's the humble mood of the cobbler, not like the brahmana who thinks he knows everything. To be like the cobbler, humility. But whatever, nothing is impossible for you, my Lord. You can do anything you like. And this humble attitude evokes the mercy of the Lord. So maybe we don't understand some things. Even Lord Brahma doesn't understand. Even as in Srimad Bhagavatam, who is that said that I may understand the Srimad Bhagavatam, Sukadeva Goswami. Is that Lord Shiva speaking? Maybe he's speaking some. Sukadeva Goswami may understand the Srimad Bhagavatam. I'm not sure about Vyasadeva, whether he understands it or not. But in general, it's not something you can understand just like that. It is revealed to us accordingly. As they surrender unto me, I reveal. So this is an opportunity to surrender to Krishna. Every opportunity challenges. When we're preaching, sometimes we don't know what to say. The whole point is to take shelter of Krishna, to become humble. Humility means taking shelter of Krishna and the devotees of Krishna. This is humility. Surrendering ourselves at their lotus feet. Do what you wish with me, my Lord. Okay, we'll finish there. I apologize for being somewhat untuned in. But that's Krishna's mercy. Trying to prepare us, to qualify us to become useful instruments in the service of Srila Prabhupada. Everything has its purpose. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Are there any... time has expired. We have to finish, I guess. Breakfast time.